It was the year 1370, a very significant year in the history of the world. Do you know why? It was the first time ever that a clock tower was erected in the world, in Germany. And from that time onwards, people started to take a little bit more heed and diligence to exact time. Now, thank the Germans again that in 1510, the pocket watch was invented, and people became a little bit more accurate in terms of their timing. Before that, you know, you would go by the sun and generally hours and what would happen at different times during the day, but not so specific. And so little by little, people started to get more exact in their timing. And as they became more exact in their timing, they became more hurried in accomplishing things according to their time. In fact, before Edison invented the light bulb, people would sleep for approximately 11 hours a day. Would you like that now? Instead of at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. or 4 a.m. or 7 a.m., whatever, your alarm goes off, right? Thank the Germans for those inventions of the clock and the pocket watch and a little bit more exact timing. But now we average much less time to sleep because our day is more fuller. Our day has so much more events. We are so much more busier in what we do. In 1967, there was a Senate subcommittee that was studying the technological advancements that were happening, and they came to this conclusion. 1967, they came to the conclusion that by 1985, people would only work 22 hours in the week, and for only about 27 weeks in the year, because technology was advancing at such amazing rates and such phenomenal things were being accomplished that we would have to do less, right? And so 22 hours a week, 27 weeks in a year, because technology is going to help us to cut back. And their worry was, what are people going to do with all their time? Right? Sounds ridiculous now, right? That as technology increases, we've actually become even more busy. As things that we say are time savers, like microwave, instead of having to cook everything, we think that we're actually saving time. We think that we're occupying less time, but we've actually become a much more busy society. A society in which there's so many other things going on, and we're running from one thing to the next thing, or rushing from one thing to the next thing. 2007 was another significant year in the history of the world. Do you know what happened in 2007? Steve Jobs released the iPhone in 2007. Facebook was coming on the market at that time. They were already there, but they opened up now for anyone with any email address to join. Twitter, known as X now, was coming out in 2007. 2007 was such a significant year in the history of our world technologically that changed the course of what people were going to be able to do and accomplish. Now we have more technology in our pocket than the technology that took man to the moon. We are living in such a technologically advanced generation. And now with AI and other things that are happening, we're thinking, okay, well, AI is going to help us, and it's going to cut down our work. We don't have to do so much. I think we're going to end up becoming even busier, even fuller. Here's a study that was done, obstacles of growth survey of over 20,000 Christians across the globe. And they identified from this study that busyness was a major distraction to their spiritual lives. Busyness was a major distraction to their spiritual lives. And they highlighted these five different steps that would happen that would make it was sort of recursive, and it would just keep going and going, and you were stuck in this loop that you couldn't get out of in a busy life. Number one, Christians are assimilating to the culture of busyness, hurry, and overload, right? That's the kind of culture that we're living in right now. Busyness, hurry, overload. Have you ever found that? Right? You're always, late. Oh, and then you're speeding, and then you're rushing. When I got to do this, and I got to do that. And then the week ahead of me, I've got so many things on my to-do list that I have to accomplish. Now we have apps for to-do lists and all sorts of things that we want to try to accomplish. Then God becomes more marginalized in Christians' lives. So as we become busy and we're trying to keep up with all of these things, God doesn't take the primary place. Jesus doesn't take the primary place. We're not seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness in the primary place. And those things get pushed to the margins. And because it gets pushed to the margins, then as a result of that, there is a deteriorating of a relationship with God. And because your relationship with God is deteriorating, then Christians become more vulnerable to the adopting of secular assumptions about how to live. And because now they become more vulnerable to those assumptions, there's more conformity to a culture of busyness, hurry, and overload. And then once you're back at number five, you're actually back at number one. And then the cycle continues over and over and over again. Because we're in this place of busyness and hurry. We've been studying in these past few weeks about spiritual formation, about practicing the way of Jesus, about adopting a posture, as Donna said, to be like Jesus, to become like him, and to do as he did. And as we are seeking to be formed in the way of Jesus, as we're seeking to become people of love, because God is love, we have to realize this, that hurry and love are incompatible. They don't work together, right? Have you ever tried to talk to Daniel when Daniel was in a hurry, right? Maybe it's Sunday after service, I'm going, oh, here, oh, I'll get back to you. And does it sound like Daniel is a person of love in those situations? Probably not. And if I've offended you, please forgive me, right? But there are situations and circumstances, sometimes we're in a hurry to do this and we're in a hurry to that, and we are not people of love. They are incompatible. And so that's why Dallas Willard, the Christian philosopher and the person that spoke and wrote a lot about Christian spiritual formation, and his book, Spirit of the Disciplines, I would highly encourage everybody to read that, Spirit of the Disciplines by Dallas Willard. He said this, that you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Right? Ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. If we want to be formed in the way of Jesus, if we want to adopt the lifestyle of Jesus, which was not a hurried lifestyle, if we want to be able to walk in the way of Jesus, as Dallas Willard says, we need to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. That takes intentional steps to slow down, intentional steps to create space and margin in our lives, intentional steps to be able to spend time with Jesus. If we want to be formed in the way of Jesus, we have to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. If you read through the Gospels and you see the life that Jesus lived, Jesus was never rushing about. He took his time when he was going to this place and that place. In fact, if you look at some of the amazing, miraculous things that Jesus did, quite often some of those amazing and miraculous things were a result of an interruption. That Jesus was on his way to do something and somebody interrupted him. And Jesus didn't say, listen, I'm busy right now. I got my schedule to meet. I got my to-do list to get to, right? I can't deal with you right now. No. Jesus would stop, create space, create margin for that person, and meet that person's need. One example amongst many examples. Okay, and there's a lot of them. You can read through the Gospels. There was a woman. She had an issue of blood. She needed some healing. And there's crowds around Jesus, and he was talking to people and healing people. And then this woman just said, if I can just but touch the hem of his garment, then I will be whole. And she reached forth her hand and touched Jesus. And Jesus realized that something happened, and he said, hold on, stop. Something has taken place. What has happened? And he stopped until he found who this woman was. And he told her, your faith has made you whole. There's so many different times when Jesus was on his way to one place and people cried out, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stopped and he asked that man, what do you want me to do for you? Oh, that I might see Jesus. And Jesus said, receive your sight. In so many instances and situations, we see how some of the most miraculous and amazing things that Jesus did were a result of an interruption in his way. That somebody stopped him, somebody asked him something. He was not too rushed. He was not too agenda focused. He was not too busy to meet the needs of those that were around him. And so we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. We have to be, if we're going to be formed in the way of Jesus, then we need to walk in the way of Jesus. Tyler Staton says this about Sabbath, and we're going to talk a little bit about Sabbath today because Sabbath is a place of rest. Sabbath is, his definition is, a sacred time for intentionally attuning our whole selves to that which is most eternal and true. When I think about this definition, I think about Jesus, how his whole self was attuned to that which was most eternal and true. That even when he was disturbed, and even when he was interrupted, and even when he was called out for something else, he was attuned to what the Spirit of the Lord wanted for him. He was attuned to the will of God and the plan of God for his life. Unfortunately for us, we get so busy, we pack our schedule. If you're like me, I pack my schedule, and sometimes at the end I'm like, oh man, I didn't have time, you know, for the other things. And I end up packing my schedule with this and this and this, and sometimes, you know, I'll look at my schedule like, oh, it's 3 weeks away. Oh, my week is free. I'll put that there and I'll put that there. And then I get to that week and I'm like, oh, my whole week is full. Have you ever done that? Plan ahead and then you come to the actual week and you're too busy. I love what Corrie ten Boom said. She said this: if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. Right? If he can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. Too busy to be formed in the way of Jesus. Too busy to spend time in the presence of Jesus. Too busy to spend time in the Word of God. Too busy for prayer. Too busy for people. Too busy for the needs that are around us. We can become too busy in so many different ways. So I want to talk to you a little bit about Sabbath because, as I mentioned last week, we talked about various practices. And part of what we were talking about various practices is there things that are in our life that we don't know how we can overcome or how we can change, but maybe there's a practice in the way of Jesus that can help us to deal with some of those things? Is there a practice in the way of Jesus that can help us deal with our impatience? Is there a practice in the way of Jesus that can help us with our lust? Is there a practice in the way of Jesus that can help us with our anger? Well, is there a practice in the way of Jesus that can help us with our busyness that often has ripple effects in so many other areas of our lives that we are unable to be formed to the character of Jesus and in the way of Jesus? Well, that practice is called Sabbath. And so that's what I want to talk to you about this morning, is about the practice of Sabbath. So I'm just going to talk to you about the practice of Sabbath in the Old Testament and the practice of Sabbath in the New Testament, so that we don't think that it was just something that people did long ago and it's just for the Israelites or it's for the Jewish people. They do Sabbath still. No, it's actually for each and every one of us that God calls us to practice Sabbath, because Sabbath is one of the practices of Jesus. And as we practice Sabbath in the way of Jesus, we can also receive the life of Jesus. And Sabbath will help us in the busyness of the lives that we live. So let's look at Sabbath first in the Old Testament. Actually, when you think of Sabbath in the Old Testament, it actually extends even before the Old Testament. It extends all the way to creation, because this is actually a creation principle. In the book of Genesis, I won't read all the verses. The verses will be on the screen. You can find it in the notes page online as well. But in Genesis 2, it talks about how when God created the heavens and the earth, after he worked for 6 days, he took a break on the seventh day. Right from the beginning, this message is called Rhythms of Rest. Right from the beginning, God was instituting a rhythm of rest, and he was modeling that for us. Work 6 days, rest the seventh day. And this is the rhythm which God is calling us into as well. Oftentimes for us, we're just working every single day, and we don't take time actually to rest. We don't take time to declutter, to be unbusy, to be able to spend time with the Lord. Now, after creation, he also instituted it in the Ten Commandments. And oftentimes we look at the Ten Commandments and we say, yeah, those commandments are for us today. Everyone except Sabbath. I should honor my father and mother. I shouldn't kill. I should love the Lord my God, right? I shouldn't covet, right? We go through all those Ten Commandments and say, yeah, those are all applicable for today, except the Sabbath. Is that true? No. Sabbath is important as well. In Exodus chapter 20, remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week to do your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. So this is part of the Ten Commandments. It's part of what God instituted for the children of Israel, and it's something that's still applicable for us today, that God calls us into a time of rest. God was so serious about the Sabbath, not only did he want a rhythm of 6 days work, 1 day rest, he also instituted a rhythm of 6 years work, 1 year rest. Now, doesn't that sound appealing to anybody? Right? It's called the Sabbath year, right? Sort of where we get our term sabbatical as well from. Sometimes you take a sabbatical. Well, God instituted a Sabbath year as well. He wanted the land to have rest. And so he said, okay, I want you to cultivate your crops and I want you to work for 6 years. On the sixth year, I am going to bless you abundantly so that you will have enough crops for the sixth year, for the seventh year, and for the eighth year, because you'll need food for the sixth year. The seventh year, I want you to rest. You'll have enough food for the seventh year, and I'm going to give you enough food for the eighth year as well, because it's going to take you some time in the eighth year to actually plant and harvest. And so that's what God was going to do. Now, does that take faith? It does. This is part of what God was trying to institute in the people, but also in our lives, that to actually celebrate the Sabbath, it takes faith and trust. Okay, God, so you're telling me, year one, I'm going to have enough food for me. Year two, I'm going to have enough food for me. Year three, I'm going to have enough food for me. Year four, I'm going to have enough food for me. Year five, I'm going to have enough food for me. And year six, I'm all of a sudden going to have enough food for year six, year seven, and year eight? Wow, that's really good. But it's going to take faith. It's going to take trust in the Lord. In Leviticus chapter 25, you can read the whole chapter later on, and it talks about this, how he gave these instructions, how they were, once they entered into the land, they were to give the land rest. So can you see how serious God is about the Sabbath? It's not just 6 days work and 1 day rest. It's also 6 years work and 1 year rest. He was wanting to have this rhythm in the children of Israel about a Sabbath year and a Sabbath rest. And even after that, there's something called the year of Jubilee, that in the 50th year, so you do 6 years, 1 year rest, 6 years, 1 year rest, and then when you get to that 50th year, it's called the year of Jubilee. And in this year of Jubilee, you would let all your debts go. You would, everyone that was in captivity would be set free, right? In addition, you must count off seven Sabbath years, seven sets of 7 years, adding up to 49 years in all. Then on the Day of Atonement in the 50th year, blow the ram's horn loud and long throughout the land. Set this year apart as holy, a time to proclaim freedom throughout the land for all who live there. It will be a jubilee year for you. You know, sometimes the reason why we don't experience liberty and freedom in our own lives, sometimes the reason why we experience bondage and addiction in our lives, the reason why there are things that we feel like we are captivated by and we're struggling with, we feel like there's chains in us and we can't get free. Sometimes there's things that are like besetting sins that go over and over and over again in our lives and we just can't overcome that. We just can't come out of that. Well, is there a practice in the way of Jesus that might be able to help us with that? Yes. It's called Sabbath. That as we Sabbath and we take that time apart with the Lord and we spend that time with the Lord, as we rest and as we stop and as we delight and as we contemplate and as we worship, we are practicing the way of Jesus. We are imbibing the life of Jesus and he is changing us and he is transforming us. As we have that rhythm, there's so many different rhythms that God wants us to have, daily, weekly, monthly, even yearly, different things he wants us to have in our lives. No time to get into all of those today. But as we develop these spiritual disciplines and rhythms in our life, we are practicing the way of Jesus. There is a way, a practice that can help us to be set free. And we can see from what Jesus was describing, not just in the Sabbath day, but the Sabbath year and the year of Jubilee, it was something about liberty. It was something about freedom. It was something about being set free. Actually, it was about a covenant. It was about a pact that God had made with Israel. Sabbath is actually a covenantal sign of the promises of God towards us that he will fulfill that in our lives. Look at these verses in Exodus chapter 31. Tell the people of Israel, be careful to keep my Sabbath day, for the Sabbath is what? A sign of the covenant between me and you from generation to generation. It is given so that you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy. The reason why we forget the promises of God, one of the reasons why we doubt the promises of God, one of the reasons why we forget about this eternal covenant that he has made that is sealed by the blood of Jesus in the New Testament time, one of the reasons why we don't receive all of the impact of this eternal covenant is because we are not practicing this important practice of Sabbath. And we are not keeping our end of the Sabbath practice. For the children of Israel, they didn't do their part to work 6 years and take the Sabbath year off. They weren't practicing the Sabbath properly, and ultimately that led them into captivity. That led them into Babylon. And God said, I'm going to take you out of this promised land, this place that I promised you, this place that I've given to you. You have seen the fulfillment of my promises, but yet you have not obeyed me. So I'm going to take you into captivity, into Babylon. And when you're in Babylon, the land is going to have rest. Right? Eugene Peterson says, Sabbath is a time to do nothing so that we can receive everything. Receive the promises of God. Receive the covenant of God. Receive the liberty of Jesus. Receive the presence of God. Receive the life of God. We can receive all those things. There is a practice in the way of Jesus called Sabbath that if we are diligent to be able to practice that, a spiritual discipline, we will experience Jesus like we've never experienced him before. We will see changes in our spiritual lives. We will see liberty. We will see freedom. We will see bondages being broken. Because we have this rhythm in our life of resetting and spending time with the Lord. The children of Israel, they failed to keep the Sabbath. And because of that, they were taken into captivity. Again, you can see this connection here between liberty and captivity. Between liberty and Sabbath, captivity and Sabbath. You can see this connection here that because they were not going to, they failed in their Sabbath celebrations, they were taken into captivity. In 2 Chronicles, a few who survived were taken as exiles to Babylon. This is the children of Israel. And they became servants to the king and his sons until the kingdom of Persia came to power. So the message of the Lord spoken through Jeremiah was fulfilled. The land finally enjoyed its Sabbath rest, lying desolate until the 70 years were fulfilled. Just as the prophet had said. And so they were taken away from the promised land to give the land rest. And they were in a place of bondage. They were in a place of captivity. Friends, how about us? As we see some of these Old Testament types and shadows and verses and how it projects forward, I'm going to get to the New Testament in a moment. But we see these principles that are there that as we practice the Sabbath, as we practice rest, as we practice the presence of God, that there's liberty and freedom that he works into our lives. There's the blessing of the Sabbath. As we practice the Sabbath, here's the blessing. Keep the Sabbath, in Isaiah 58, 53, keep the Sabbath day holy. Don't pursue your own interests on that day, but enjoy the Sabbath and speak of it with delight as the Lord's holy day. Honor the Sabbath in everything you do on that day, and don't follow your own desires or talk idly. Then, I love this line, the Lord will be your delight. I think in so many ways and forms, we are not delighting in Jesus because we are too busy. We're not experiencing the fullness of the presence of God because we are too busy. We get up in the morning and I got to do this, this, and this. Got to take care of my kids. I got to do this job and do that. And all of these are legitimate things that we have to do. All these things are things that we need to take care of. But we become so busy. We're doing this, this, and this. And then by the end of the day comes and we're ready to put our head to the pillow and we are so tired. We are so exhausted. We've become so busy that we don't spend time with Jesus. But if we practice this rhythm of Sabbath, then the Lord will be your delight. Okay, let me go to the New Testament just so that you're not thinking, well, Daniel, that was all in the Old Testament. What about the New Testament? Well, in the New Testament, this is a practice that Jesus practiced. This was something that Jesus did and that his disciples did. And actually, it was a gift. It was God's gift of the Sabbath, right? When the Pharisees and the Sadducees were complaining against Jesus because he was healing on the Sabbath, he was doing good on the Sabbath, he was helping people on the Sabbath. Look at what Jesus says as a result. He said, then Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. They were getting it the wrong way around. They were thinking, well, I'm here, and I got to keep the laws of the Sabbath. I got to do the things that. No, the Sabbath was a spiritual rhythm. The Sabbath was a spiritual discipline that God put in place to bless humanity, not the other way around. We are not here to be conformed to a rule of Sabbath. We are here to be changed by the rhythm of Sabbath. We are here not to be legalistic about Sabbath, but we are here to be able to practice Sabbath so that we can be formed in the way of Jesus. So the Son of Man is Lord, even over the Sabbath. Rich Villadas says it this way: Sabbath is not a reward for hard work. Sabbath is a gift that precedes work and enables us to work. Sometimes we think, okay, Sabbath, oh man, I've worked so hard this week. Okay, finally I'm looking forward to my Saturday or my Sunday or my Monday or whatever it is, and okay, I can rest. No, Sabbath is actually supposed to is supposed to precede that week so that we spend time with Jesus, so that we are re-energized, that we are filled with the life of God, filled with the presence of God, delighting in the Lord, and it is a gift to us that enables us to do the work that he's called us to do. In the New Testament, we see that Jesus healed on the Sabbath so many times. And when I see this so many, time after time after time, I see this type and shadow in the Old Testament where when they didn't practice Sabbath, it led to captivity. It led to bondage. But in the New Testament, we see Jesus on the Sabbath day revealing the beauty of Sabbath, revealing the purpose of Sabbath. Jesus specifically healed many people on the Sabbath day, I believe, to be able to show the liberty and freedom that comes from Sabbath. We see here in Luke chapter 13, one Sabbath day as Jesus was teaching in the synagogue, he saw a woman who had been crippled by an evil spirit. She had been bent double for 18 years and was unable to stand up straight. She was in bondage. There was something that was there. Remember, when God brings healing to us, he brings healing holistically. He wants to heal our spirit, our soul, and our body. There is a healing work. That Greek word that's there for salvation and healing is the same word, sozo. It's a holistic healing that God brings to us. And so a few verses down, it says, this dear woman, a daughter of Abraham, had been held in bondage by Satan for 18 years. Isn't it right that she be released even on the Sabbath, or especially on the Sabbath? Because the Sabbath is a picture of liberty. It's a picture of the year of Jubilee. It's a picture of freedom. It's a picture and a place where we are delighting and enjoying the glorious liberty of the children of God. That's the beauty of the Sabbath. That as we practice the spiritual rhythm, the spiritual discipline that he's put in place all the way from creation, that it brings the life of God to us, and life in all of its abundance, life in all of its fullness. He wants us to experience that liberty of the children of God. Here's an amazing thing that happened, because nowadays, Sabbaths generally are on Sundays. Now, you could celebrate a Sabbath on any day of the week, but I want to go back to the New Testament time. This is actually one of the proofs for the resurrection of Jesus. See, for all of those centuries, the Jewish people celebrated Sabbath on Saturday. Even till today, Jewish people, Orthodox Jews, celebrate Sabbath on a Saturday. Something radical and transformational happened after the resurrection of Jesus, that all of a sudden, the Jewish people who are followers of Jesus decided that we are not going to celebrate Sabbath on Saturday. We are going to celebrate Sabbath on Sunday. It was a completely new worldview for them. This is one of the proofs of the resurrection, because aside from the resurrection, there is no explanation for why this group of Jewish followers of Jesus stopped celebrating Sabbath on a Saturday and started celebrating it on Sunday, because they wanted to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, which was the first day of the week. And that's why, as I mentioned before, they celebrated on Sunday, not at the end of the week, but at the beginning of the week, a place of refreshment, a place of liberty, a place of freedom, a place of re-energizing, a place of being filled with the life of God, filled with the presence of God, ready for the week ahead, ready for what God might have them to do. And so they started celebrating on Sundays. In Hebrews chapter 4, it talks about this rest. So there is a special rest still waiting for people of God. For all who have entered into God's rest have rested from their labors, just as God did after creating the world. So let us do our best to enter that rest. Friends, let's do our best to enter into that rest. There's an eternal rest that's coming in the presence of God. But for here and now, God wants us to practice Sabbath so that we can enter into that rest. We are living such busy lives, such full lives, lives that are occupied in so many different ways. But in many ways, busyness is a hindrance to our spirituality. Busyness is an obstacle to our following Jesus. because we get so drained in all the other things that we're doing that we're not being formed in the way of Jesus, but we are being formed by the culture that is around us. Robert Rauhnheiser said this, pathological busyness, distraction, and restlessness are major blocks today within our spiritual lives. Try to just stop for a moment. And if you were just to sit in silence for a moment, how many times, if you sat for an hour, how many times would you try to reach into your pocket for your phone? Because we live such distracted lives. John Mark Comer shares in his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, a number of different things that you can try to do to try to create space in your lives. One of the things that I'm going to try to do is get into the longest checkout line when you go shopping. Right? And when you're in that line, don't pull out your phone and be like scrolling, waiting until you get to the cashier. But take the time to pray for the people ahead of you. Take the time to pause and rest. Because if you're like me and like most other people, when you get to the checkout line and you're at No Frills or Costco or any other place, what are you doing? You're scanning. What's the shortest line? I got things to do, places to be, and people to talk to, so give me the shortest line. Or when we're driving in traffic, oh, this car in front of me is going really slow, so what should I do? Go to the next lane. You're really slow as well. Let me go back to this lane. Why do we do that? Because we are so busy. We don't have time to be interrupted by the Spirit of God. We don't have space and margin in our lives because we don't have the 7-day rhythm of Sabbath. But as we create the 7-day rhythm of Sabbath in our life, we will find ourselves less busy on the other 6 days. We will find ourselves with space and margin, liberty, freedom. We will experience some of the things that we are in bondage right now, the besetting sins, the things that we're unable to overcome, the things that we keep falling into time and time and time again. Well, is there a practice in the way of Jesus that can help us liberate us from those besetting sins? Yes. It's called Sabbath. And it creates space and margin for us to spend time with the Lord. Here's the invitation of Jesus is to rest in him. The invitation of Jesus is to come to him. In Matthew chapter 11, Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens." Anyone like that here? Anyone here weary with heavy burdens in your heart? "And I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls." Oh, friends, our souls are so busy. Our lives are inundated with this thing and that thing and the other thing. And you're probably thinking right now, the whole thing, everything you ought to do Sunday afternoon, right? You're thinking about lunch, and you're thinking about all the other things that you need to get done this afternoon. And we fill our lives with all those things. Worship team, please come. So as we sing to the Lord, I want to encourage you, Sabbath for us today, I want to encourage you in 4 ways. And that's this. Stop, rest, delight, and worship. Sabbath, the literal translation for Sabbath is stop. So take time to just stop. And then rest. "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Delight in the Lord. As we read that verse in Isaiah, then you will experience and see and know the delight in the Lord. And then worship. If you want to dig a little bit deeper into the Sabbath practice, pick up the Sabbath practice from the Apprenticing with Jesus wall, the card there, and it'll give you a little bit more information. There's a whole 4-week study if you want to study a little bit more about Sabbath and learn what it actually is to stop and rest, delight, and worship. But he has ordained this practice all the way from creation so that we might experience and know him and know the liberty and freedom that there is. It's called the glorious liberty of the children of God. Let's stand and let's sing to the Lord.